You ready for another one? At the end of tonight's session, in the lobby there, they'll be handing out cholesterol medication. And you can take it with bacon grease, because that's back there as well. So hopefully you will take advantage of that. For those of you that care, my son won his football game today. He played. I got a video. He played center. So, yeah, that was awesome. And my daughter had her cross-country meet, and she took, I just wanted her to finish, right? So she took 315th place out of 500. So I'll take it, right? The first one ever, so good. So that's exciting. And that's all I got tonight, so amen. My wife's birthday, well, let me tell you about my wife's birthday. Thanks for asking. My wife has all these severe food allergies. She's gluten-free, dairy-free, everything-free. So before I left, I searched high and low and drove all the way to Pewaukee, if you know where that is, from Slinger. It's like another country. And I found a gluten-free, dairy-free cake. So I was the hero. So that's how it went. That's all I got. It's good. So when I was a freshman in high school, I decided to change sports. From the time I was five all the way through junior high, I played baseball. And so I decided that I'm going to play basketball. Well, I'm only 5'9", so you can imagine how that went. So I tried out for the freshman team and got cut, which is the one thing I have in common with Michael Jordan. And so I felt frustrated. A little discouraged. Some of you just got that. Frustrated and discouraged, and I needed to do something, so I decided to give high school wrestling a shot. If you know anything about wrestling, any wrestlers here, anybody wrestle in high school? So you know what I'm talking about. So I tried freestyle wrestling first, which is really hard. Now, when I say wrestling, I'm talking about real wrestling, not like what you see on TV. Because I remember when I was a kid, it was WWF. Now it's like WWE or something. And I was devastated when I found out Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant weren't real. That was a crisis of my childhood. But, so when I talk about wrestling, I mean real wrestling, competitive wrestling. And if you know anything about wrestling, there's three styles, Greco-Roman, freestyle, and then scholastic, which is practiced in most high schools. And so I tried freestyle, and I got killed. I lost every match that season. So the next year, I tried high school wrestling, and I did okay. I think I went 13-12, so I won more than I lost. But the truth is, wrestling's a tough sport. It really is, regardless of all of you that would make fun of guys on the ground rolling around, whatever, I heard it all. But it's a very hard sport. It's divided into 3 2-minute periods, and you exert tremendous amount of energy. So when I would wrestle in high school, I'd get off the mat, and I'd be shaking, and all the blood vessels in my arms would be broken from squeezing. And it was very, very, very tough. So I think about that, and I realize it's no wonder that when we are grappling or struggling with a situation, we will often say, I'm wrestling with that, whatever that is, because it's a great analogy. I mean, to wrestle with something means to take part in a fight, either in sport or defense, or to struggle with a difficulty or problem. So my goal for this weekend is to kind of weave each message together. So we talked about the messy middle last night. This morning we talked about being brave. Tonight I want to talk about wrestling. There's actually a wrestling match in the Bible. It's a wrestling match that encompasses both definitions of the term wrestling. It's the story of a physical wrestling match, but also the story of wrestling with a difficulty. Now, the story takes place in Genesis chapter 32. So if you've got a Bible, you can turn there. We'll get there in just a minute. One of the things I love about the Bible, especially the stories of the Old Testament, there's a lot of humanity there. In the midst of all this humanity, God is present, and he's nudging people forward. The Bible is filled with stories of people's experiences with God. And some of those stories are stories of struggle, stories of wrestling, and they teach us things. We read those stories, and we learn from the experience, because, listen, in our life, all of us will wrestle. I'm pretty convinced that that some of you right now are wrestling with something. Maybe you heard the message on Friday night and you're wrestling with being in the messy middle. Or this morning you heard about Brave and you're wrestling with maybe a brave decision that you need to make, maybe even when you get home. We kind of all get to that place. And we need to give ourselves permission in life to wrestle through things. Because we'll all wrestle through disappointments. We'll wrestle through big decisions, some of which are life-changing. We'll wrestle with bad decisions we've made. We'll wrestle with doubt. We'll wrestle with relationships. We'll wrestle with God. We'll even wrestle with the Bible. I mean, have you ever picked up the Bible and been confused? Anybody? Come on. This is kind of off note, but there's a story in Genesis, which isn't tonight's text, but I'm just going to go there anyway. There's a story in Genesis 19 that's always confused me. I've always wrestled with it, and I've tried to figure it out. I just can't get it. Genesis chapter 19, there's this story where two angels come to Sodom, and they're going to destroy Sodom, and Lot invites them in to his home, and so they go into his home, and we read in verse 4 of Genesis 19 that the men of the city from Sodom come out, and they surround Lot's house, and they call it the Lot, and they say, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out so that we may have sex with them." And Lot went to the men and said, "I beg you, don't do this. This is wicked." Verse 8 says, "Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do with them as you please." Now, I've got a daughter, right? Okay, so I read that and I scratch my head and I've looked into the cultural ramifications. I've had well-meaning people in my church send me documents on what they believe this means. But regardless, it's a man giving away his daughters to some perverts, is the story of Genesis 19. And I wrestle with that. And it's okay. Because the moment we think we have God and the Bible figured out, we begin a fast spiritual decline. Because I believe our spiritual reality was meant to be wrestled with. I also believe that we're in a very crucial place in history. I think we're in a place in history where a lot of people are losing common sense, really. And so I wrestle with that. So when we come tonight to Genesis chapter 32, which really is our text for tonight, not Genesis 19, that was a sidebar that was free. You don't have to pay me for that one. So we come to Genesis chapter 32, and I want to set the context before we actually get to the story. The story of Genesis chapter 32 actually begins all the way back in Genesis chapter 25. In Genesis chapter 25, there's a man named Isaac and his wife, Rebecca, are barren. They can't have children, and so they pray to God, and they pray, give us children. And so God hears their prayer, and they conceive twins, Esau and Jacob. Jacob is born last. He comes out clutching his brother's heel, and they're polar opposites. So Esau, if you read Genesis, is a man's man, really. He wears camouflage. He drives a pickup truck with a lift kit, with a gun rack. He likes to hunt. He's chews tobacco, probably. That's Esau. Jacob is very, very different. Jacob's kind of a mama's boy. He likes to work in the kitchen and knit, and that's kind of what he does. They're very opposite. Neither is wrong. If you like to knit, that's awesome. But that's just how these two are wired. So we come to Genesis chapter 25, and Jacob takes advantage of his brother. So Esau comes in from hunting because he's a hunter. Jacob's been in the kitchen making stew. And some of you know the story. And Jacob sees his brother coming in, and his brother says, "I'm famished. Please give me some of your stew or I'm going to die." And Jacob sees an opportunity here. And he says, "I'll tell you what, you can have some of my stew, but first I want you to trade me or sell me your birthright." Now, you've got to understand what a birthright is, at least in the ancient world. The firstborn son of any family was given what was known as a legal birthright. And what that meant for them was when their father died, the oldest son would receive twice as much inheritance as all the other children. And they would become the leader of the family, okay? So there's a lot riding on this. So he comes in and Jacob says, "I want you to give me your birthright. I'll give you some soup." And in what I would think would be the worst trade in the history of all trades, Esau trades his birthright for some soup. Double the inheritance, and leadership in the family. Now we hear that and we say, that is so stupid. Who would ever do something as stupid as that? I'll tell you who would do something as stupid as that. You would, if it were the right bowl of stew. They make this trade, then we come to Genesis chapter 27, and he's going to do it again. In Genesis chapter 27, their father is old and he's about to die, and so Esau still has the blessing. So in ancient culture, you had the birthright and the blessing. The blessing was a formal prayer that would be prayed over the oldest son, and they believed it had the power to determine reality, future reality. So Jacob decides he's going to steal that too. The scriptures tell us that Esau was a hairy man. So with the help of his mom, which I don't get this at all. So with the help of their mother, Jacob deceives his father and steals his blessing. So he goes in disguise because his father's blind. You follow me the story? If you haven't read it, go back and read it. It's fascinating. Tonight, good reading for tonight, so with your meat, belly full of meat. So he goes in, dressed like his brother, his father's eyesight's failing, and his father blesses him, thinking it's Esau. Are you following me here? Am I clear? We're not in comas yet. So he blesses him, and Esau finds out about it. So now Jacob has stolen the birthright and the blessing, and Esau finds out about him, wants to kill him. Any of you have a younger brother? I have two younger brothers. And there have been moments I've wanted to kill him, but not like this. So Jacob sees his life is on the line. So Jacob's mother fears for his life. She knows her oldest son's going to kill the youngest. So she says, go to my brother Laban and hang out there for a while until your brother cools down. So he runs away, goes to his uncle's farm, and he begins to work on his uncle's farm where he falls in love with his cousin whose name is Rachel. Falls head over heels with Rachel, and he says to his uncle Laban, I want to marry your daughter Rachel. Can I have her hand in marriage? And he says, yes, but first you have to work for me for 7 years. The deal is struck. 7 years of labor. He works. The wedding day arrives. He is standing at the altar. Jacob is standing at the altar, and at the last minute, Laban goes in and takes Rachel out of the bridal gown and puts his oldest daughter, Leah, in. Instead, pulls the veil over and sends her down the aisle. You can't get stuff like this on TV. I mean, so she goes down the aisle. They get married. It says that they have their honeymoon that evening. And Jacob wakes up in the morning and realizes he's been tricked. So I'm thinking it took him till the morning to figure it all out. How do you not know? But he didn't know, and so he's furious. And he says, you told me I could have Rachel. And eventually he says, well, you can have Rachel too, but you've got to work for me for 7 more years. And so he does, and marries both the daughters. Time goes on. I'm summarizing real quick here. And eventually some family tension happens, and Jacob decides he's going to leave. He takes off with a load of possessions, with his daughters, with his grandkids, and he says, I'm going to go home, and I'm going to try and reconcile with my brother. So on his way home, he hears that his brother hears that he's coming, and his brother's coming out with this army of men to meet him. Now, he finds himself in a really tough place, and I want to share this story with you, beginning in verse 22. So we're in Genesis chapter 32, verse 22. Jacob and his family are traveling through the desert. Laban's on one side. Laban's ticked because he took off. Esau's on the other side. Remember, he deceived Esau even though years have passed. So we come to Genesis chapter 32, verse 22. Jacob spends the night in the desert. That night he arose and took his two wives, his female servants, and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he could not prevail against Jacob, he touched the socket of his hip, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the day is broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel. For you have wrestled with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask me my name? And there he blessed him. And Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and my life has been delivered. The sun rose upon him as he passed, limping because of his hip. So Jacob in this story finds himself in a very tough place. No matter where he goes, there's trouble. If he goes back to Laban, there's tension in his family. If he goes forward, there's tension with his brother. Now, history tells us at this time, Jacob would be about 100 years old. He has 11 kids from four different women, which is never a good idea, though it's in the Bible. If he moves forward, his brother's there, and you know what he did to his brother, and his brother wants to kill him. If he goes back, his father-in-law is there, and his father-in-law is furious, so I guess you would say he's kind of in the messy middle. And it's in that place that God chooses to meet him. Now remember, the Old Testament stories tell us about people's experiences with God, and we learn from those experiences. And what we learn about Jacob is that his entire life has been filled with deceit, with trickery, and with scheming. But if you dig below the surface, if you get below the outer shell of his reality, what you discover is Jacob was really a man searching for significance. He was a man searching for those things that would bring true meaning to his life, but he was looking in all the wrong places. His life was marked by struggle, particularly to obtain blessing from God. And so he struggled with his brother, he struggled with his father, he wrestled with his father-in-law, and eventually God. And it was in the search for that one missing piece, that blessing that would make him whole, that he actually found God. Now, a lot of us are like Jacob. We walk through life. Many of us are searching for those things that will make us whole or pure or right. We're wrestling, trying to figure out who we are. And along the way, those things press on our insecurities. See, I believe the story of Jacob is really the story of all of us. Looking for blessing, looking for acceptance, looking for wholeness, struggling with our own insecurities, with our own doubts and fears. And right smack in the search, just when it seems impossible, God meets him. You ever notice that God seems to meet you in the most impossible of situations? A few years ago, I was invited to go visit one of our missionary partners in the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa. The Congo is a very unstable country, and I felt like I was supposed to go. My wife wasn't real happy about it, but I decided to go, and right before I left, a rebel group known as the Lord's Resistance Army overtook the capital city of the DRC, and I still went, which was probably stupid. But I went, even though the country was listed on the government's do not travel list, but we went to Congo. But on the way, we had to stop in Uganda for a layover. It was a 24-hour layover. And we got there, and I was waiting for my luggage to show up. I had a backpack with some stuff, and my luggage doesn't show up at all. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm so frustrated, and I said, okay, whatever. So I go to the desk. So I'm in Uganda talking to a representative of Turkish Airlines, so there's like no American or really even good English being spoken here. And I'm trying to figure out where my luggage is. And they tell me that my luggage has been delayed in Istanbul, Turkey, and won't arrive for 2 days. The problem is I'm leaving the next day to go to the Congo via a missionary charter plane. So what I find out is I'm going to spend the next 7 days in the Democratic Republic of Congo with what I have on my body and what's in my backpack, and that's it. I have no clothes for 7 days, nothing. No medicine, nothing. I said, okay. Spend the night in Uganda. I need to go buy some clothes somewhere. There's no Walmart, right? And so I asked the lady in the guest house I'm staying at, I need to go into town and buy some clothes. How do I get there? And she says, you need to ride a Buddha Buddha, which I found out was like a dirt bike. And so there's me and one of our pastors, and we're going to go into town, and this dirt bike shows up. And I say, where's the other one? That's it. So there's three of us on this dirt bike, three-year-old men, and I told the guy that worked for me, you're in the middle. And so he gets in the middle, and we ride into town, and we go to this, there's a market that's selling used clothing. There's no stores, and so I'm kind of going through piles of underwear to find a clean pair that I can buy. and I'm there, and my friend buys some clothes, and we get back, and we're trying on these clothes that we bought, and he's looking at his clothes, and he's like, why are there buttons on my pants? And he bought girl pants, which was hilarious, because that's all he had. And so it was awesome. So we eventually get to the Congo, okay, and I am so frustrated. I have nothing with me, but these used clothes and a backpack, and I'm laying under the mosquito net, because there's malaria there, and I'm so irritated. And I had this encounter with God. And the conversation went kind of like this. Mike, do you have what you need? I guess. Then what's the problem? And it may seem to you like such a simple conversation between me and the Lord, but that conversation has changed my life. Because it's amazing what you can get by on when you only use what you need. So what do you really need? Tonight, what do you really need from God? Ironically, when I got home 3 days later, how my luggage showed up. In that moment where Jacob is wrestling with God, he had one of those kind of moments. It was in that moment as he wrestled with God that Jacob made his faith his own, because what he discovered was he didn't need daddy's blessing. He didn't need his brother's blessing. What he needed was God. Not based on heredity, but based on an encounter. See, until the story that we read here, God is often referred to in the Old Testament as the God of Abraham and Isaac. But after this story, in the rest of the Old Testament, God is referred to as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Because of this encounter that happened in the book of Genesis. Now, technically, it should have been the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Esau, but Jacob stole that. See, what wrestling with God does is it exposes you for who you really are. And that's actually a good thing, because that's the essence of the wrestling match that we read about in this story. Jacob is wrestling with a man. Now, the man never identifies himself, and so we ask, who was it that he wrestled with? I mean, if you ask five theologians, you'll get five answers. Some say it was God. Others say it was Jesus. Some say it was an angel. But we know this for certain. It was a supernatural being. Jacob is already scared, okay? So when this wrestling match happens, Jacob is scared. He's petrified. He doesn't know if his brother's going to kill him. And you would think that God would come and just love him, embrace him, say it's going to be okay. But instead, God comes out of nowhere and pile drives him. I mean, the guy is 100 years old. And God just comes and they wrestle all night. And Jacob is exposed for who he really is. Verse 25 tells us, when the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip. And it was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then Jacob said, let me go, for it is daybreak. But Jacob replied, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And the man asked, what is your name? And he answered, Jacob. Now I find this particular line intriguing because the man is God. He already knows what Jacob's name is. He wasn't asking for his own benefit. He was asking Jacob to admit who he really was. Because in that moment, Jacob had to realize who he really had become. The name Jacob means one who supplants. The word supplant means to take the place of another through force or scheming. Jacob needed to admit who he really was. So in that moment, he finally, for the first time, does something truthful. He said, my name is Jacob, and I'm a deceiver. I've tried my whole life to obtain blessings for myself by my own manipulation. But in this moment, I'm repenting. And the light was turned on in his world. Sometimes the light is turned on in our world and we're embarrassed by what we see. I mean, a lot of us know things in our life aren't that good. But if we were to really have God's light expose our life, we'd be shocked at how bad they'd really become. Some of us need to admit who we really are, and that often takes a wrestling match. Some time ago, I was in a season of deep wrestling, and I was sitting with a friend of mine. He's a psychologist. His name is Rick Marks. Some of you might know him from camps or retreats here. We were sitting in my kitchen, and I was very, very frustrated. I was frustrated with my spiritual life. I was missing my family in Michigan. We live in Milwaukee. Missing my family in Michigan. I was frustrated. My wife's in school. I'm just so frustrated, and my kids weren't listening to me. Anybody have that problem? My kids weren't listening. Nobody. Awesome. So I was just very, very frustrated, and I just kind of puked on him for 20 minutes, just complaining. And he looked at me, and he goes, "You know, Mike, you know what your problem is?" I said, "What, Rick? Tell me." He said, "It's all about you. Your whole life is just about you." And in that moment, all the lights were turned on. First, I got mad, punched him in the face. He bled a little bit. But then I realized, oh my gosh, he's right. He's right. See, part of the wrestling match with God was that Jacob needed to be exposed for who he really was. Sometimes God will allow you to be broken so he can save you. Or said simply, God will break you to save you. So we see Jacob's hip is wrenched, and he walks with a limp. God said, match is over, we're done. He wrenches Jacob's hip. I suppose that hurt. 80-year-old man, not 100-year-old man, getting his hip pulled out of his socket. And Jacob keeps on searching for that blessing. He says, I didn't do this for nothing. Now, it's perplexing to me that this being cannot wrestle Jacob to the ground. So, with what I would call cruel kindness, he broke Jacob to save him, mostly from himself. And then he gave him a new name. So here's the transformative power of this story. God changes Jacob's name from Jacob, which means supplanter, to Israel, meaning having power with God. So he doesn't just give him a new name. He literally gives him a new identity. See, if you want to know if you've really wrestled with God, here's the proof. When you've really wrestled with God, you walk away different. You walk away transformed. But that doesn't always change your outward reality. Because if we go back to the story, the wrestling match is over, but Esau is still over there, and Laban's still back there. That has not changed yet. See, God doesn't end the encounter by saying, everything will be fine. He's still got to go face his brother. He's still got to go clean up his mess. The truth is, God doesn't always change your situation. Often, he simply changes you. He changes your identity. He changes who you really are. See, that night, the night of the great wrestling match, Jacob started that night believing his greatest need was to escape Esau. But he ended the night believing his greatest need was to simply trust God. See, if you want to be transformed, you'll wrestle. I guarantee it. And in those moments of wrestling with God, it will require honesty and openness to a level you might be uncomfortable with. Getting before God and saying, God, this is who I really am. When you strip away the facade, this is the real me. The funny thing is, God already knows. He just wants you to admit it. King David was a man throughout the scripture who wrestles with God, and we have a record of it. It's all throughout the Psalms. King David is a man who writes with startling honesty. In Psalm 42, he says to God, God, why have you forgotten me? In Psalm 55, David writes, my heart is in anguish within me. In Psalm 13, he writes, how long, O God, will you forget me forever? So I wonder, is it time to have a wrestling match with God? Maybe God's waiting for you in your cabin tonight. I know that sounds creepy, but just think about it for a second. Maybe God's waiting for us to have that moment of honesty, to admit where we really are, to admit who we really are, but opening ourselves up to saying, God, I need to walk away from this thing transformed. So whatever it takes, God, if you need to break me, break me. Whatever you need to do, God, transform me. And so that's my prayer for all of us tonight. It's my prayer for you. whether it happens here or when you go home or next week or next month or even next year, that we would all get to that place, that we would get real honest and say, all right, God, this is the real me. Let's kind of wrestle through this a little bit. Let's wrestle with my doubt and my fear and my insecurities and my inconsistencies. Let's wrestle it out, God, and let me walk away transformed. And I want to end tonight by praying for you that you will have that experience, because I can promise you, from one who's been there and from one who walks as a limp, you don't walk away the same. So gracious God, I pray for all my friends here tonight. We've had a great weekend. There's been so many good things that have been happening. We've enjoyed being together. But here we stand, oh God. Tomorrow morning we are going to pack our things and we're going to go back to reality. And for some of us, we're going to a reality that's not that different than Jacob. Behind us is Laban, in front of us is Esau. And so maybe, God, even on the car ride home tomorrow, we need to have a little wrestling match with you. God, maybe some of us need to get real honest with who we are. But I know you are a God of great grace, and God, great mercy, and sometimes in your mercy you break us so you can save us. So I pray for every man in this room tonight that you would really do a deep work in them, or begin a deep work in them. That this weekend wouldn't just be a weekend where we said, yeah, I went and shot guns and ate steak, but that this weekend something happened. I encountered God in a way that I have never encountered him before. And I ask you that in some small way, each one of us walk away transformed. In the mighty name of Christ, I pray. Amen.